Becoming a full-time writer can be overwhelming. Join Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon as they help you improve your craft and find your audience so you too can become a career author. This is the Career Author Podcast.
All right, welcome to episode number 68 of the Career Author Podcast. I'm Zach Bohannon. With me every single freaking week is Jay Thorne. What's up, dude?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I cannot really complain. I can't complain. It's been a pretty good week so far. So how you doing?
I'm doing good. I was giving a talk this past weekend, and every time that happens, I end up telling, like, you know, the origin story or talking about things that happened. And I was kind of reminded again that it's been 10 years since I started this. And it's just funny. You think about things that you did when you were starting out and or how things have changed, how the platforms have changed. And it's a trip. It really is. Time goes fast.
Yeah, it's and 10 years especially, like, a lot of stuff has changed.
Yeah.
I'm sure from your, you know, I have obviously haven't been in this that long, but I'm sure, you know, you've seen a lot of changes come through and how things are working. So yeah, that is really, really interesting. So,
yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
By the way, did you watch Game of Thrones yet?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. We won't spoil it for people on here, and we're not going to waste time talking about it, but we got to talk about that later.
All right.
We get to talk about earlier in the week, but anyway, so speaking of Game of Thrones, today's topic is what makes a good character great. You see what I did?
Yeah, I see that. That was good.
Lots of great characters on that show. So we're going to talk a little bit about what makes a good character great, and it's going to be based on, you know, a lot of research and stuff we've been doing for story levels and just stuff that we've learned over, you know, like 10 years of your experience writing characters, you know, and doing it in novel form and everything. So should be a good topic today. So, but before we get into that, we want to remind everybody that the Career Author Podcast is brought to you by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor. And for as little as $1 a month, you can support the show and gain access to our 2 monthly bonus episodes, as well as so much more. And you can become a patron of the show, like I said, by just visiting patreon.com/thecareerauthor. And with that, we have a new patron this month. I'm going to say this when you're ready for this. This is an awesome one. She got a great name. Kimberly de la Montaña. I had to do it like that.
I don't know why, but okay.
She probably just unsubscribed to be a patron. That's awesome. But no, thank you, Kimberly. We definitely, I'm sorry if that's offensive. I said, hopefully not. I was just having fun. So, but no, seriously, we definitely appreciate your patronage and very glad to have you on board. So thank you so much. And another Patreon related thing, we want to remind everybody that our movie for April is American Pie. So you can, you know, go check out American Pie. Unfortunately, it's not on Netflix. It was when I came up with it for the poll and then it went off. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
But it's okay. You know, it's totally worth renting to watch again or go get it from the library. So, so definitely check out American Pie. And Jay, you want to remind everybody about our awesome giveaway we have going on?
Yeah, we have our monthly giveaway, and April is spring cleaning month, and so we are giving away a copy of Essentialism and Digital Minimalism, and all you need to do is go to thecareerauthor.com and scroll down just a little bit, and you'll see it. Go ahead and enter in there, and we'll be doing that every month, and this is the first month we're doing it, so go ahead, jump in there. There's no purchase required, no obligation, just sign up, and you've got your name in the hat.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the reminder. And another quick reminder, and you can see this as well on thecareerauthor.com, is that we have a new nonfiction book. It's the first in a series we're doing that's just going to be called The Career Author. And this is the book that we actually blogged for our patrons. So it's called Planning Your Collaborative Novel, The Proven Process from Idea to Draft. And again, you can just go to thecareerauthor.com and scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the book right there, and you can click on it. And it is available on Amazon and Kobo and Nook and Google Play, all the different platforms, so it's not an Amazon exclusive. And there is a paperback available on Amazon as well. So go check out Planning Your Collaborative Novel.
And if you've read that or the blog post, I was going to say, we'd really appreciate a review up there on Amazon.
Yeah. So if you've read the book, or if you were, even if you were one of our patrons and you just read the blog posts, go leave us a review on Amazon. We would definitely, definitely appreciate it. And one quick thing, and then we'll get on with the show. We just want to remind everybody as well that virtual tickets are available for Rockapock and Sci-Fi Seattle. And you can check out rockapock.com. That's coming up really soon. And we're actually going to be turning off the ability to buy those virtual tickets coming up here. Probably the week you said, probably the week before the event, which is next week sometime. So this may be the last time we even talk about Rockapock virtual tickets. So it's under $100. Go check it out. Or you can check out the one for Sci-Fi Seattle, which is in September, and jump in on that. So that all sound good?
Excellent.
All right, so let's go ahead and we'll jump into our ways and hacks for the week. And this week I've got a little hack for you, and this one does have a couple of asterisks next to it. But I did think this was kind of a cool thing when I saw Chris Fox talk about it, and I do think this is a kind of a cool little marketing hack, again, with a couple of asterisks that I will mention at some point during this. But this is World Anvil, and Chris Fox did a video about this on his YouTube page, and we're actually, we'll put a link in the show notes to his page on this website. But basically, and the first asterisk I want to mention is that this hack is mostly going to be useful to people who write fantasy and sci-fi. So if you write outside those genres, this might be a little less relevant to you. But I really feel like if you write fantasy and sci-fi, this is kind of a cool thing. So basically what World Anvil does is it's a platform. And it's not just for authors. It's also for like D&D dungeon masters and stuff. Anyone who's like trying to build out a world and does that, you know, whether you have a video game, a book, whatever, it allows you to build that world out, and it puts it in a really cool like page that looks just like Wikipedia almost. But you can go in and you can add in your own images, and you can put like a banner at the top and stuff. And it also has a social aspect where people can follow your world. So as you update it, you know, for your readers, this is a place you can send them, you know, if they want to get more information about your world and they want to learn more about your characters and more about the history of your world and your setting and all that. That's kind of what Chris is using it for. Chris is using it in a twofold way. So he's using it for one, to build his world out and to keep track of things. And again, it's in a really nice format. You know, everyone knows what Wikipedia looks like, and it's pretty good format, so it lets you do that. But then again, you know, it's a good way for you to market your series. And if you're building a big series like Chris is with his Magitek Chronicles, then it's kind of a cool thing. So there are free and paid versions. It's not something I've used. I did kind of look at it before I did this, and I went in, and it's really intuitive, and it's really pretty cool. And I think this could be a really good thing, especially if you're a fantasy or sci-fi author. So again, it's called World Anvil. Now, I want to give the other asterisk. This might seem kind of counterintuitive to me talking about it, but this is not how Jay and I world build, and it's not how I advise is the word. Like when people ask us about world building, this is not the way we say you should do it necessarily. Because, you know, world building, the dangerous thing about it is it can be a form of resistance. So you could spend a bunch of time building out your World Anvil page and like coming up with all these races and these a government and all these different clans. And
it feels like work, but it's
and
not.
And it feels like you're working, but then like it's not, you know, like, you know, depend. And we're going to get into a lot more of this today, which is another reason I wanted to bring this one up on this episode. We also realize and understand that there is some of this necessary, especially for fantasy and sci-fi. And there are some reader expectations with, especially with like fantasy, you know, they want to like, they want maps. They want people to be able to look at all stuff. Like, so it is kind of a genre specific thing, but we really advise people to be super careful about this, because not only do you feel like you're doing work that you're really not, and you know, you're avoiding doing what you should be doing, which is actually writing the book. I feel like world building too much can also hinder your story, and it can make you, because you spend all this time working on the history of this one character, it could lead to you info dumping that information into your book, which is going to completely kill the pace in your story. And if it's me or Jay reading it, I guarantee you that we're going to put it down. So those are the asterisks, but again, You know, obviously Chris, it's not resistance for him because he's pumping out stuff left and right. And so I'm not pretending like every single author is going to be that way. But I just think this is one of those things where you should be really careful. And again, it's probably kind of a genre specific thing more than anything. So anything you want to say about World Anvil, or did I kind of nail everything?
That was good. Just the word of caution would have been what I added. And you were right on top of that. So.
And we will talk more about our world building and our book story levels coming out. So anyways, but let's go ahead and jump into our main topic this week, which is what makes a good character great. So this has been something I've been paying extra attention to lately because I've been working on some pre-production for, you know, a couple different things, primarily the big series that Jay and I are going to be diving into some point in the next 10 years. That's a joke, but I've been doing character building out character profiles and stuff, and thinking about some different, the types of characters we want in our story, what our protagonist is going to be like and stuff. And I've also been working with as kind of the author relations managers. That's the title.
That's nice. Sounds good.
I got business cards in the mail. Not really. I'm just joking. But as kind of the author relations guy for Molten Universe Media, I've been working with some of our authors as well on some of this stuff. And it kind of felt like a really good time to do a episode on character. And we've talked about some of this stuff before. And we had a world building episode where we talked about this, but I don't think we've ever done this kind of dive into actual just character in general. So again, some of this you've probably heard from us before, but other stuff, you know, it'll just kind of be compacted into this nice little tight package here that we're going to call episode 68. So let's go ahead and jump in here and talk about then. And the first thing I kind of want to talk about is what doesn't make a character great. And we kind of just hint at this, but, and you've heard us say this, but, you know, a 15 page profile detailing a character's favorite foods and memories of prom night and where they went on their first vacation and what their favorite movie is. Okay. You get the idea. Like none of that is what makes a great character. And in fact, like I just said a minute ago, taking the time to do this could actually damage your story in the long term, because, you know, if you take the time to figure out like what your favorite character's memories of prom night is, you're going to be like, well, you know what? I thought about that and I wrote that down, so I got to get that in the story somewhere. And you end up shoehorning that into your story, and it's probably something your reader is not going to care about. Now, again, you may not necessarily be like that, and for some people, it might, make them feel like the characters are more real if they know all that stuff, but to us personally, we think it's a waste of time to do those types of character sheets. And it just doesn't really help your story at the end of the day. And again, could lead you to info dumping, which is the absolute worst thing you can do for your character and for your story. So, you know, what we always talk about is it's much more appealing to a reader if you show them what kind of person your character is, instead of trying to tell them through backstory and through what their favorite things are and all this stuff. So what we truly believe, and you know, this is something that Sean Coyne talks about in Story Grid, of course, is that character is revealed through action, AKA plot, which is why you'll hear Jay and I a lot of times say that we don't believe that character-driven stories and plot-driven stories are mutually exclusive. You have to have both relatable characters and an enthralling story to create a narrative that readers are going to love.
Yeah, I'll add a little something on there too. I think it's even more specific than revealed through action. I think it's revealed through decisions, which is why it's so important that every scene has to have a crisis moment. And the crisis moment is not a calamity, or it's not the worst thing that happened to the character. It's a decision, a really hard decision that has to be made. And that is where character is revealed. It's in how we respond when we're faced with decisions.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think that gets talked about enough, because, you know, we obviously try not to overload people with Story Grid information as much as we talk about it. You know, we'll leave that to the Story Grid Prod podcast and to the experts, you know, to Sean and Tim over there. But, you know, we talk a lot about how your story needs to have these five things happen. You know, you've got the, you know, your five commandments, and you've got your global five commandments, and then you have your 15 obligatory scenes. But one thing we don't talk about enough is that every scene should have those five things.
Yes.
And that you should have a crisis in every scene, and that crisis will help your scene turn, you know, and have a polarity shift. And, you know, we try not to get that granular, but, you know, I do that when I'm writing first drafts now, and it didn't do this at first, but now I write down the five commandments for each scene before I write it. And it really helps. You know, a lot of people are going to think that's tedious, but I feel like it's made me a better writer and it's made our stories better. Yeah. So, you know, knowing a little bit before I write the scene, just setting myself up. So, I'm really glad you brought that up. That's really, decisions are super, super important to reveal your character. But you know, a lot of people talk about, well, that's a character driven story, that's plot driven story. And it's like, no, like, they're really not mutually exclusive. If it's a plot driven story, if you're calling it that, you're probably calling it that because the character probably just doesn't have any dynamics and sucks. Like, you know, a lot of people call Bond a plot driven story. Well, because James Bond is a pretty flat character at the end of the day.
Right.
You know, I mean,
there's no internal genre. That's not the point.
Exactly. It's there's no internal genre and there's no growth in his character. And on top of that, he's not relatable. So he's not really a relatable character to anybody. So, and of course, that's just one example. And you can also go the other way. And, you know, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but you'll hear, you know, people say, oh, well, that's a character driven story. And it's like, okay, well, what happened?
Well, those are usually the sort of the art house favorite ones, which are like, here's 40 minutes of people at a cocktail party. That's a movie. It's like,
yeah.
No, it's really not. It's no story there. It can be entertaining listening to people talk and watching characters interact, but that's not a story. So yeah, you got to have both.
Or it can be not entertaining. And
or not.
Or Roma. Oh, sorry. My bad. I should have hit my cough button there. I don't know what happened. So all that said, though, you know, there are some things that we feel you should think about with your characters during your pre-production phase of writing a book. So even though we don't write out these really crazy questionnaires and stuff for our characters, there are some basic questions we answer and some really basic things that we think about. So, I think one thing that's important is that your character needs to be relatable to whoever your desired reader is. So and a lot of times that often is going to go back to genre. So you really need to know your genre and your reader. And you know, that's one reason why, and we talk about this a lot, you know, we love post-apoc and we love writing post-apoc, but we don't really, there's a whole section of post-apoc that's military post-apocalyptic. And, you know, our buddy Nick Sansbury Smith is great at writing that. And, you know, but for us, like, that isn't necessarily what we're into. And it's not, military characters aren't relatable to us because neither of us were in the military. And it's just not something that Jay and I are necessarily into. So we kind of try to go with the more normal people who are thrown in these situations, you know, who kind of have more normal day-to-day jobs and stuff, and how they would react to the situations, because it's relatable to us. And so in turn, we feel like it's going to be pretty relatable to that reader we're going after. So would you agree with that when I say that?
I would, yeah. And I would say the flip side of that is, some people love the military stories, flavor of stories, because they get to kind of live vicariously through this character,
yeah,
which is
sure.
Just as legitimate. It's just not the characters that, you know, we identify with.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously I'm not saying that like you had to be in the military to enjoy a military post-apoc story, right. But you know, there are certain groups of people that is not going to be relatable to. Mm-hmm. So, But you want to try to make your characters as relatable and likable as possible. You know, being likable is another thing. And you know, that's a mistake we've made in the past.
I was just going to say, and we don't always get that right, but we try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like making a main character, ex-convict. So
yeah, for a lot of people, it was not a very likable character. Yeah.
Now we knew going in that he was going to redeem himself. And that was part of his story. Was that, you know, he wasn't necessarily supposed to be likable at first, but it probably, there were better ways we could have done that,
right.
to hook people and make them realize, no, by the end of this, he's going to redeem himself. So we've made that mistake, obviously. But kind of the main things that we want to know about a character going in is it's honestly really basic. Like, we want to, you know, we cast our characters, which I'll briefly go into in a minute, which we've talked about, but I want to hit on some of the other things is, you know, we want to know our character's name, obviously. So we try to come up with the a cool sounding name. Sometimes the character's name specifically has meaning. So, for instance, we have a character in a book named Reyna, who is in a future post-apocalyptic world, in a post-apocalyptic Seattle where it rains a lot, and water is a big theme. So the name Reyna, which it's spelled R-A-Y-N-A, is, so it's a little bit different, but people can get the gist, is important. Like that, there's symbolism to that name. So, so we have our name. We want to know how the characters, obviously, what their occupation is. So, once you know the occupation, you kind of have an idea of some basic skills and things they're going to have that you can use throughout the story. We like to know who their close family and friends are. Nothing too crazy there. Just who their allies are going to be in the story, who their family is, and then their archetype. Jay, I want to kind of pass this over to you and let you kind of talk about archetypes for a second, because I know you just did a bunch of research on this.
Yeah, I did, and you and I haven't really even explored this yet, but I've, as people know, I've followed the lineage back from Sean Coyne and Robert McKee and Christopher Vogler all the way back to Joseph Campbell, and I'm a really firm believer in archetypal storytelling. There's no doubt about that. I think it's really impactful. I think it's the best way to tell stories. But I've really been rethinking a lot of the more traditional archetypes. And I think I had a big revelation when I read The Virgin's Promise by Kim Hudson. And I was lucky enough to interview her for Story Levels. And it's really sort of fundamentally shifted the way I'm viewing archetypes. And there's going to be a lot more on that to come. But I think if you look at things like The Virgin's Promise, you look at the emergence of the tarot as a way of tapping into archetypes. And what's really beautiful about these new methodologies, well, they're not new, but maybe emerging methodologies, is that they're nonlinear. And it gives you a lot of flexibility as a storyteller, which I think that's one of the limiting factors of archetypes in the hero's journey format, is that it's a prescriptive, like, there must be the call to action. There must come before this, must come before this. Like, you can't do those out of order. And what's really cool about things like Tarot and the Virgin's Promise is they're nonlinear. So you can have these different archetypical moments and characters all throughout the story. And I'm just at the very beginning of that, but I think it's really exciting. And I think it is important to study those archetypes, because it's easy to go right into cliche or two-dimensional characters or cardboard cutouts. That's a challenge, you know, because you have to play to the archetype, but you have to make them unique at the same time. So it's really interesting, and I'm excited to kind of learn more about it. I'm knee deep in it right now, and I love learning. I'm always learning new things, and this is definitely on the radar.
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought up Tara too, because, you know, obviously you and I have talked about it a little bit, but, and I've told you how Kat, my wife, is huge. I mean, she's really into tarot and astrology and stuff. And, you know, I told her just weeks ago, like, oh, I'm never going to be into that. I just don't believe in it. And then like days later, I bought my first tarot deck. but for me, it was related to writing. And this week I actually had my first experience where I used tarot to help develop a character. And it was awesome. Like, it was so cool. And if you're on YouTube, I'll show you, like, this is the deck I got. You can kind of see it there. And it was obviously, Joanna had a podcast about it. And then after hearing you guys on the Writer's Wheel and hearing Rachel say that using tarot was the single biggest, it brought her, I don't remember how'd she phrase it, it was the single best thing she did for her writing the last year. I was like, okay, I have to give this a shot.
Yeah, and if I have my dates correct, it's either this week or next week on the Writer's Well. Caroline Donahue is on talking about tarot.
Awesome. So awesome. Very cool. And she wrote Story Arcana, correct? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. So, and it's really pretty cool. Like, it was awesome to use that this week. And it was her book that I used her kind of her method to go through that process to do it, and it was really, really, you know, for someone like me who's not into all that, like, you know, on the surface, it did take a little bit of an open mind to, you know, to get through some of the fluff and stuff that's around tarot, in my opinion, you know. And but I've really started to come into it and really think it's definitely awesome a tool to use as a writer for sure. So let's also talk a little bit about wants and needs, and I'll let you kind of chime in on this because I know this is another thing you've been doing a lot of research on. But you know, you want to know what your character wants and what your character needs, and often, more often than not, especially if you're telling a, you know, you want to tell a good story, your character's want isn't what they need. So your character may want one thing, but then realize through their growth throughout the story that what they actually needed was something else. And I feel like identifying these up front, especially for your protagonist and your antagonist, assuming that your antagonist is organic, it will help you drive your character story forward and help them grow. So Jay, you want to add anything here about wants and needs and maybe go a little deeper on that? You have anything to say on this?
Not a ton. I will just say that, again, I'm going to be talking with KM Weiland about character for story levels. And in that is this idea of wants and needs. And we've talked about Maslow's hierarchy. And I think a good way to summarize it, and this is because I was doing some reading on the Rolling Stones at Altamont, but I think the Stones had it right in that you can't always get what you want, but sometimes you get what you need. And I think that's a great way of looking at characterization.
There you go. I can't sum it up any better than the Stones, I guess. So, all right. So then I also want to talk about theme a little bit as it, you know, pertains to a character. So I know that there's a big thing with authors, with a lot of authors, and I used to prescribe this, and to a degree I still do, but also can see the idea of trying to come up with your theme up front. So a lot of authors believe that you don't know the theme of your story until you've written your story. And again, I do agree with that to an extent. I think that you will discover a lot of things through your story that will help reveal that theme to you. But I have become a believer, and Jay, a lot of it's because of you, and you've convinced me that you need to at least have some kind of an idea of your theme and something that you're aiming at the beginning of your story. And if you do, it will save you a lot of time, and it will help you write a stronger story. And when I say save you time, I think that you'll do less revisions, and because you'll be thinking about the theme of your story as you go. And I really saw this last week. I was working with a couple of our MOM authors, our Moulton University Media authors, and we're helping them kind of try and nail down their story. And their story had this like amazing parallel to Finding Nemo, which I made fun of Jay because we had the whole Pixar thing going on. But they're writing this post-apocalyptic story, and just not from a tone standpoint, but from a character arc standpoint, like Finding Nemo was the perfect parallel. And so I kept coming back. And these guys agreed. They were like, okay, that's actually perfect. That's, you know, when we look at our main character, that's kind of the story we want to tell, the arc we want them to have. So when we started going through and looking at their character, I was like, well, no, this character wouldn't act like this, I don't think. And I kept coming back to theme, which is, you know, parents must learn to trust their children. It's pretty much like the theme of Finding Nemo for the most part. And we kept coming back to that, and it really has helped them really build those characters out and given them something really to aim at as they're writing this story. So I really am a true believer that having some idea of your theme going in is going to help, and it can go to your character's decisions and what they would do and wouldn't do and what kind of story you want to tell. So what do you think about that, Jay, and just theme in general as it relates to character?
Yeah, I've always felt that way. I've always thought that way. I don't think you necessarily know what your theme is going in, but you need to know why you want to tell that story.
Yes.
And that is what's
That's a good way to word it.
Yeah. And that's going to become your theme. You don't know exactly what it is, but you just need to know why it's that story. I mean, there's so many stories you could tell, why that one, and that's going to plant the seed for theme later on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the last thing I'll briefly touch on, we've talked about this a lot before, I believe, so I won't go too far, but you know, another thing we do in this process is for most of the characters, we cast them. And just to kind of give a review, the reason we like to cast characters is, for one, like, I don't feel like it's good enough just to like Google image pictures. And for some characters it is, like, if it's a side character and you just want, and they don't have a huge role in the story and you just want to get an idea what they're going to look like, I think that can be okay. But for main characters, I really like to cast actors, or but not just cast just the actor themselves, but cast the actor in a specific role. So the example I think that we've used before is, like, let's say you have a character that you want to look and kind of act like Tom Hanks. Well, Tom Hanks is a totally different character, let's say, in Castaway than he is in That Thing You Do or Forrest Gump or something. Like, it's a totally different character, and he has different mannerisms and different ways he acts. So I think that that going with a specific role of an actor will kind of help you have an idea of how that character would talk, what they would act like, what some of their mannerisms would be, how specific words they would say. Like, it gives you a whole, just a more dynamic to your character. Now, you're obviously not ripping that character off from that movie. It just kind of gives you a starting point and an anchor to come back to when you're thinking about that character. Maybe you get stuck with something they might say or how they might act. You can kind of come back to that. So we really like casting characters, again, especially picking specific roles for our main characters. So Jay, if you don't have anything to say on that, I'm just kind of jumping a little recap here and we can wrap it up.
Okay.
All right. So just to kind of recap, allow your character's actions to reveal their character and who they are. And going back to what Jay said, allow their decisions to impact and reveal who they are. You know, don't tell the reader who your character is. Let the character show them. Be really lean with your character profiles. You know, again, you don't need to go into all this crazy stuff that probably won't even show up in your story or be relevant. Keep it really lean and just get what you need to know, and then reveal your character through their action. A character's archetypes, their wants and needs, and their story and your story's theme will be a better way to anchor your character than knowing what hotel they stayed in the first time they went to Tokyo. So going back to kind of what I was saying, you know, all those things together is going to create a much more relatable character and a more real character and a leaner character as far as like someone that your reader can really get to know through your story than doing these huge 15-page profiles. So, as we've kind of mentioned through this, you know, we're going to have a lot more to say about this stuff coming up and in story levels, and then in some of the stuff we're going to do based around story levels. So, but we just wanted to do a little deep dive on character today.
Excellent. So, well done.
Awesome. So, with that, we'll just remind everybody to check out all the stuff we're doing over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor, and consider everything we're doing over there. And, you know, if you like the podcast, tell someone about it. You know, that's really what we ask. You know, we're really proud of the audience we've built and, you know, the community we've built and everything. So, you know, thank you. If you like what you're hearing, just tell someone about it. That's really all we ask. So, and again, you can check out all the other stuff we've talked about over at thecareerauthor.com. That is the hub of this show. And you can see all the cool stuff we've got going on over there. So with that, I'm Zach, and that's Jay, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you
later.